what's going on in the world today, then you've come to the right place. Welcome to Southern Sense Talk Radio with your host, Annie, the Radio Chick Eubelis, and featuring Curtis C.S. Bennett and the most interesting guests that you'll find anywhere on internet radio. So sit back, relax, and remember, Southern Sense is common sense.
All right, and welcome to another adventure here on Southern Sense. You're listening live on Facebook, LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitch, X, iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, and half a dozen other places. We're still having a little trouble getting it through to our homepage, which is back up. The new homepage is back up. We just have to fine-tune getting it streaming back onto our homepage. But we do have the chat room open on the homepage there if you want to join us at southernsense.net. I'm your hostess with the least mostest, the Radio Chickadee Annie, along with my co-host, author C.S. Bennett. Good afternoon, Curtis. We've got a big day here.
Yes, we do. And we have one of our old friends, Lou Typhoon, that's coming on, and a friend of his after that. So looks to be, you know, a great show today.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we have great guests lining up in the future. We have coming up next week, Carrie and Joshua Fontaine, who started a homeschool institute called the Exodus Institute. And they're helping parents homeschool their children. And believe it or not, it costs the family only $29. And it's a Christian conservative homeschooling, and they're having a great success. We're going to be talking about that next week. But with Typhoon Lou, who I've known for a long number of years, when he started up I Am American, I've known him for that long a time. He was working with Herman Cain, God bless his soul, rest his soul. And now we're going to have his friend, Chris Jersky, will be joining us. We would be having Mark Tapscott, but unfortunately, he had an impacted tooth that had to get pulled. And as he told me yesterday, he looks like one of the chipmunks. He is so swollen. I feel so bad for the poor guy. Having had a couple of teeth pulled, I know it's not fun. And he's not a happy camper, but he will be joining us back in 2 weeks, hopefully with all his teeth still intact. Oh, man. We've got crazy season coming up. I mean, every day in this campaign, it gets crazier and crazier. And Trump has been forced to be in a courtroom and not out on the campaign trail. If this is not election tampering, I don't know what it is. This
I'm telling you, they gagged him.
The deliberate intimidation of a candidate.
But, I mean, everyone can speak about the case except for him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Michael Cohen can go and speak, going on TV and news radio shows and everything else, say whatever he wants about Donald Trump. Same thing with Stormy Daniels. She was on The View. But yet Donald Trump is not allowed to exercise his First Amendment right as free speech. We'll see what happens. It looks like they're handing him a lot of issues that can go straight up to the Supreme Court and overturn everything that has been done to him. And this is deliberate harassment at this point. Yeah. There's nothing else to say.
I believe that's his best scenario. All the unconstitutional things they're doing to him. And I think once it gets up to the level of the Supreme Court, they're going to expose it for what it is and slap it down.
Yeah. And he's setting precedent. I mean, he's sticking with his guns, and the Democrats are laughing, but guess what? We're going to have the last laugh. The case with Fannie Willis is falling apart. Jack Smith's case is falling apart. Mm-hmm. What's going on in New York with Letitia James is falling apart. Bit by bit, they're dismantling these cases against Donald Trump. I mean, things that would be a civil fine and at best a misdemeanor are suddenly turned into felonies. unprecedented, never happened in the history of this nation. And the end result? Businesses and people are now fleeing New York State. Why would you want to do business in New York State when you will not even adhere to the normal business practices that have existed there since the birth of this nation? New York City was the business capital of the world. It's going to be a ghost town. It's going to be a ghost town. And thanks to Alvin Bragg and Letitia James. Thanks to Governor Hochul that has allowed all this to happen.
Even after years of saying that he was going to leave, Sean Hannity finally left New York.
Mm. Oh, yeah, that's right. Barbara Streisand said she was going to leave if Trump gets reelected. Hey, listen, don't let the door hit you in the butt and we'll help you pack.
Yeah, they all say that on the left.
Well, that said, those that listen to the show know that we start it off each and every show with a dedication to a fallen hero. And today's dedication is going out to Correctional Officer First, Robert Danford Clark of the Georgia Department of Corrections. His end of watch was Sunday, October 1st of 2003. And let me pull up the dedication video and bring that up. And this will read, if I get this all going correctly, bear with me. This is from USA Today by Theo Nagoyan. And he wrote, a correctional officer at Southeast Georgia Prison was killed after he was assaulted with a homemade weapon by an inmate, state officials said. Robert Clark, 42, died at a hospital after an inmate attacked him at the Smith State Prison in rural Glenville, about 60 miles west of Savannah, Georgia. The Georgia Department of Corrections said in a news release, the correctional officer was escorting two inmates, Leighton Lester and Marco Willingham, from the prison dining hall on Sunday, October 1st. When Lester attacked him from behind, the department said, Willingham stepped in to help Clark, but was also assaulted. Both Clark and Willingham were transported to local hospitals, according to the department. Willingham remained hospitalized overnight that Sunday with injuries the agency described as non-life-threatening. Clark, who started working at Smith State Prison in April, tragically succumbed to his injuries at the hospital. The entire GDC team is mourning the loss of one of our own, and we collectively express our deepest condolences to Officer Clark's family and friends, Corrections Commissioner Tyrone Oliver said in a statement. We will support them as they navigate this tragedy over the coming days, weeks, and months. Clark's death is the latest incident at the troubled Smith State Prison and Georgia prison system, where contraband issues and corruption resulted in arrests of hundreds of prison employees, including Smith State Prison's former warden, Brian Dennis Adams. Lester is facing charges in the assault and resulting death of Clark, and the assault of Willingham, the Georgia Department of Corrections said. Lester is serving a life sentence for a murder conviction stemming from a 2007 killing and armed robbery in Tift County, the agency records showed online. The inmate, Nathan Weeks, was an alleged member of the Yves Saint Laurent Squad, a gang that smuggles contraband into Smith State Prison. In March, grand jurors indicted Weeks and two other members of the gang for malice murder, felony murder, and aggravated assault in the 2021 homicides. And then that was all that was written that I could find. What I did pull up afterwards was his obituary from the Carter Oglethorpe Funeral Home. And they wrote, Officer Robert D. Clark, 42, passed away on Sunday, October 1, 2023, in Glenville, Georgia. He was born on June 19, 1981, in Fort Stewart, Georgia. Officer Clark led a remarkable life filled with selflessness, bravery, and a commitment to justice. He worked for the Georgia Department of Corrections. Beyond his professional accomplishments, he had a wide array of interests that brought him joy throughout his life. He had a particular fondness for strategy games that allowed him to exercise his sharp intellect. Additionally, he shared an extraordinary bond with animals. His beloved 17 dogs, 6 cats, chickens, and ducks were his cherished companions. To those who knew him best, he will be remembered not only for his exceptional professional achievements, but also for being a loving son, brother, uncle, and friend. His kind spirit brightened the lives of everyone around him. His warm-hearted nature served as an inspiration to all who had the privilege of knowing him. Officer Clark is survived by his mother, Elizabeth H. Connolly, 2 brothers, 4 sisters, nieces, and nephews. He was preceded in death by his father, Marvin H. Clark, and 2 sisters, Glenda F. Wood and Shirley L. Clark Croft. Today's show is dedicated to police. Slides being shown in certain parts of this. I apologize. Today's show is being dedicated to Correctional Officer Robert Danford Clark of Georgia. And I will correct the video later on. And with that, I will dedicate this show to all the brave men and women that serve as first responders, be they firefighters, emergency services, or law enforcement. We also dedicate this show to all the brave men and women that serve in our military from the birth of this nation through today and into our hopeful future. We dedicate to them this song by Tiffany, Soul of a Nation. May God bless each and every one.
Let it be said, when we finished this race, we kept them free, we led with grace. Let it be seen, from sea to shining sea, beautiful America, living our legacy. Oh, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, each other, oh, for the soul of the nation, for the next generation. Let us be known as people of honor, humble and bold, faithful through fire. Let us hold firm with wide open hearts. And our time has come. We gave them hope. We made them strong. Let it be said. When we finished this race, we kept them free. Yeah, we led with grace.
There we go. I almost looped it all the way back around. Jeez, I'm not doing too well today. Ah, for those that are listening and watching, I have to apologize. We had a little bit of emergency in this household before we went on air live. My husband's cat of 14 years went into violent, violent convulsions, and we had to rush him to the vet. So I got home with 15 minutes before airtime. The cat is still at the vet. He's coming around very carefully, slowly, but we think it's the diabetes. His glucose levels must have gone awry. So there, he's in good hands. He's in good hands. We know he'll be home soon. So so if they seem a little discombobulated, we're worrying about this cat. And, you know, they're like our children. You know, they're part of the family. Yeah, Curtis, turn your volume up because we don't hear you. There we go. There we go. Nope. You're back out again, Curtis. No sound from your end. You're going to have to try that again. I'm having a little technical difficulty here, folks. This is live. That's what happens when we're live.
Check one, we, check two.
There you go. There you go now. You may have a faulty button on that.
All right.
There we got you. Listen, we were talking about this upcoming funny season with the elections. And it's getting crazy. A friend of mine sent me a text while I was in the vet here in South Carolina. They're trying to turn this district completely blue. And it's still a very red, except for the Charleston area of the district, solidly red. But they're trying to challenge every single Republican that is running up for election. And their new gimmick is everyone that's running for re-election, they're putting a woman up against that person. This is the newest gimmick. You run an entire slate of nothing but women. And then when the men beat them, well, how nasty we are to womanhood, except there happens to be one Republican, a friend of mine, Shannon Erickson. So they're putting a Democrat woman up against Shannon. Otherwise, all the other seats are being challenged by Democratic women. Now follow this, because this dovetails right into it. They had this whole big news article about the Women's Democratic Party here, how they have their going to war to reclaim these seats. Yeah, remember the Democrats when they ran the South the last time? What happened? Let my people go, right, Curtis?
Yeah, well, I would tell people, look at which party. It's allowing men to get in women's sports. We know who cares about women.
Yeah, exactly. Well, this dovetails right into it because billionaire Soros has poured $60 million into the Democratic war chest for the 2024 election cycle. And he poured it into Democracy PAC. And this is the second largest contribution that has been coming in. In January of 2022, he gave them $125 million. So this is slightly less than half, but it is a huge chunk. Democracy PAC allotted a substantial portion of the donation, funneling $21 million to a constellation of super PACs throughout the country during the first quarter. Notable beneficiaries included House Majority PAC and the Senate Majority PAC, each receiving $4 million. He also gave $2.5 million apiece to Planned Parenthood Votes and Black PAC. All right, organizations pivotal in championing reproductive rights and fostering diverse representation in state-level governance. Now, pay special attention to that. $2.5 million each to state-level governance, which is what they're doing right here in South Carolina. A large chunk of that money is being funneled into CD1 here in South Carolina. He's also has gone into the media realm. Soros now wants to control the media, something called Odyssey, a prominent radio company. And he's also expanding the presence in the audio landscape. He's doing a multifaceted approach to, quote, shaping public discourse and influencing the electoral narrative in the lead up to the 2024 election. So one man, one billionaire, George Soros, can funnel money, launder money, basically, through all these PACs. Now, there's a book out called Audacity, and forgive me, I forgot off the top of my head the name of the author. I'm in the midst of reading that, and we're going to be having that author on soon. Let me see if I can pull it up on my Kindle here. And it is about dark money, and it's called Arabella, and it's by Walter Scott. And he talks about Arabella being the center, the nexus for all this dark money. And it goes out to thousands of different branches, such as Planned Parenthood Votes and all these other organizations, Democracy PAC. And you can all trace it all the way back to Arabella, the very core of it. But they do it in such a way that they evade campaign finance reform. They're unaccountable to the IRS, and they're influencing our elections. They're using the almighty dollar to influence the elections. So when you find yourself censored on Facebook, on YouTube, on any other of the social platforms, ask yourself who's actually back behind that. You're going to find a lot of the censorship we have coming back to PACs like this. So folks, be on the lookout, because this is coming to a neighborhood near you. You know, the super PACs aligned with GOP candidates unveiled their financial standings, disclosing they had $24 million. But you notice how much more money is being poured into these Democratic primaries. And American Petroleum has woken up and is contributing $1.5 million, while venture capital firm, I can't even pronounce this one, Redison Horowitz offered $250,000 in support. So, folks, we got George Soros with this dark money, and they're unaccountable. They're not accountable to anyone. These organizations such as Arabella is funneling all this money into all these organizations, and they're unaccountable to anyone. So as I said, we're going to have Walter Scott on in our future show, and we'll be talking about that. Curtis had to step away for a second. Excuse me. But we're waiting for our first guest to call in a few minutes, which would be what we call Typhoon Lou, Lou Marin. I met him a long number of years ago. He was actually with Herman Cain when I met Lou the first time. He was hosting an event on the USS the Yorktown here up in Charleston. Matter of fact, I have a picture sitting over my desk. I did. Oh, I do have a picture of Herman Cain over my desk. And I did have another one somewhere up there. with my late husband and I with Herman Cain at the same event that Typhoon Lou was hosting. So we'll have Luke being calling in a few moments, and Curtis is going to be coming back on in a split second here and find out what is going on in the world. Welcome back, Curtis. You just went out of focus. You just went completely out of focus. And your microphone is off again. Jiggle your microphone switch because you're off again.
It helps if I unmute it.
Oh, that does help.
That was Lou. He's going to call in now.
And he's opening the webpage, I hope, right?
Right.
Okay. Some of these older folks, we have to teach them what to do. like I'm a spring chicken, right?
Actually, what happened was he has a different email than what I have. He's not using the one that I had originally. So he never got the link. So I had to send him, you know, the link under his current email.
Good. Hopefully he'll be with us very, very soon. One of the things, I don't know if anyone heard about this while we're waiting for Lou to come in, but the Supreme Court, it looks like they're starting to lean more favorably towards those January 6th imprisoned protesters. You can call them hostages if you want. They wrestled this past Tuesday with the scope of the term of federal obstruction statute. And they were looking at that, and there were some very poignant questions asked from both sides of the, the conservatives as well as the liberals. And they're having a hard time with the way that it's being interpreted by the Capitol Police and the prosecutors in D.C. They're at issue in the court fight is known as Fisher v. U.S., where federal prosecutors can apply a law passed in the wake of the Enron scandal to the January 6th, what they call assault. The measure comes that makes it a crime to corruptly obstruct or impede an official proceeding. And the defense attorneys argue that the Justice Department has turned the measure into a dragnet. And the first provision of the law prohibits altering, destroying, mutilating, or concealing a document. All right. This has never been, before January 6th, was never used. It was always used involving evidence tampering. But there was no evidence tampering. They came into the Capitol to protest. So what evidence was tampered with? This charge was levied against more than 350 defendants who breached the building. So it looks like they may be ruling in favor of having these charges dismissed against the January 6th protesters, which is really huge because many of them were convicted of this and some of them sentenced as long as 20 years behind bars on this one statute. And the justices were questioning, well, if this courtroom is interrupted with someone shouting, screaming out, is that violating the statute? Would that then become a felony and subject to 20 years behind prison? That is someone that's disrupting the court. They're escorted out. Big deal. Which is exactly what happened in Congress. They disrupted the counting of the certification of the ballot, but they didn't destroy any documents. They just postponed it for a few minutes and eventually it went forward.
Well, we know that they all grabbed it for straws.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
They're all grabbing for straws here. And if these January Sixers get a reprieve from the Supreme Court, a lot of that will impact Trump's case.
Well, I see Lou Maron is sitting here waiting, but I don't see him sitting before his camera. So as soon as Lou puts his pretty face before the camera, we'll bring him on.
Yeah, he's probably waiting for three. You know, military people, we precise. You say three, hey.
Well, I don't even, where's my timer? Oh, he's got 1 second. Here we go. It's exactly on the hour, 1500. So where's Lou? All right, he's Lou. Late. He must muster up. Oh, man. And reading this article, it looks very, very likely that the Supreme Court will, in the end, side with the defendants. And so,
yeah, this isn't America. What's going on? This is not America.
And they're just saying that they're using it as a classic catch-all, and they're using it too broadly. Justice Alito said, after asking whether a protester who disrupts it, this is exactly the argument he used, Supreme Court argument could be charged with violating the obstruction law. But we need to find out what are the outer reaches of the statute under your interpretation. So he's saying, basically, you're really pushing this a little bit too far. Now, you got to remember, Smith's charges all stem from January 6th protest and tying Trump into obstruction of the congressional proceedings. And if this gets tossed out, Jack Smith falls like a house of cards.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yep. Well, let's see if we can try to find Lou if he is with us. I see the top of a hat. That's all I see, the top of a hat. Lou, you need to adjust your camera because now I see only your nose. Lou needs to adjust his camera. Okay, we can't adjust it on our end.
Testing 1, 2, 3.
We hear you, Lou.
But we don't see you.
Because his camera needs to be adjusted down.
And I know he's not camera shy.
Lou, camera shy? Oh, my goodness. That's the last person to be camera shy. Can you hear us, Lou?
Testing 1, 2, 3.
He doesn't look testing. Like he... Yeah.
I'm going to text him real quick.
Yeah, do that because right now he needs to adjust his camera. So let's see if Lou can adjust his camera and come back on. With that said, while we get Lou to do that, let's do a little something different here. And where did I do that? All right. We will be back in a moment. I'm just going to do a little Ron Edwards here. And we'll bring that up. And here we go.
Because of the grossly inadequate government school system practice of not teaching complete and authentic American history, one would think that Black Americans contributed very little to our American society. Hello, I'm Ron Edwards. On today's page from the Edwards Notebook, if your refrigerator contains any produce from your local grocery market, then you can rightfully credit Black United States inventor Frederick McKinley Jones. Mr. Jones took out more than 60 patents throughout his life of achievement. Amongst them was a 1930s patent for the roof-mounted cooling system commonly used to refrigerate food products on extended transportation routes. Frederick McKinley Jones officially received his roof-mounted cooling system patent for his invention in 1940. He also co-founded the U.S. Thermal Control Company that later became famously known as Thermo King. The company was critical during World War II, helping to preserve donated blood and food supplies for our American war heroes during the massive war between liberty and tyranny. I'm Ron Edwards. Join me live weekdays, 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 Pacific. To find out where, go to theronedwards.com. Because of the grossly inadequate government school system practice of not teaching complete and authentic American history.
Okay. All right. We're still trying to get Lou Marin to tilt his camera up so that we can see him. So as we're waiting to do that, I do apologize. So this is live. This is what happens when you have something going on live. There we go. I actually see a face. Let's bring him back on.
Can you hear me now?
And hello, Typhoon Lou.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, you got to turn your volume up some.
Okay.
There we go.
How's that?
Not that great. Your volume's still very low.
Let's see if we can get this up. Hold on.
High technology confuses you every time. Well, where's the old megaphone?
Yeah. Tested 1, 2, 3.
Yep. You're very faint in my ear. How's he coming across to you, Curtis?
Faint.
Yeah, very faint.
Tested 1, 2, 3.
Try to move your microphone closer to you.
Tested 1, 2, 3.
Slightly better.
Tested 1, 2, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, use your booming marine voice. Come on.
Hey, come on. I'm trying to get it there. Hold on. Tested 1, 2, 3.
I've heard you work crowd without a microphone. Come on.
Tested 1, 2, 3. Tested 1, 2. How's that? Getting better?
A lot better.
Tested 1, 2, 3. I got to bring it way up here. Okay. Oh, Lord have mercy. We're almost there. Okay. I think we got it. How are we there now?
A lot better.
Okay.
Oh, man. Now, matter of fact, because I was running to the vet, I didn't pull off the printer your paperwork. No, we had a bit of an emergency with one of our kitties. He went into some violent convulsions just before coming on air, and we had to rush him to the vet. I hear my husband home now, so hopefully everything's all right. But we love our little fur babies.
I'll tell
we
you
love
what,
our fur
man,
babies.
Without them, I like them better than humans.
Looks like we got Calvin Colonel on.
Is Calvin here?
Well, I'm tossing everything out the window here, so forget about this stuff I pulled off.
Okay.
I know you are ready.
Well, I gave you an MP3 file too. Make it easier to play that. It's all there.
It's on the other computer.
Okay.
But let's bring Calvin on. Let's have a big party over here. At least hey, he knows Calvin. How to work the camera there. Does that make you embarrassed, Lou?
Now that I'm embarrassed, I'm all here for you, all of you. Look at you all. Well, I'm glad to be part of this, and it's always a great honor to see Lou and the FRA, and hopefully Chris is on board with them. And I've tried to invite as many people to chime in, Lou and CS. So this is one of the greatest podcasts that I know of. And certainly kudos to you for what you did for Vasia when she was on the air. And we would have told CS we're going to try to get her back on track now that you got all these different outlets. Way to go.
Well, if I can only get the video to go back up onto my homepage. For some reason, my homepage was hijacked. And we finally got it back, but the video is still not going up to it. So we got to fine tune that. We'll get that working. But if you notice, Typhoon's got Trump behind him. And I've got Trumpy Bear behind me.
I got the beautiful wife behind him too, Mrs. Trump.
Now that I've gone completely lost all control of the show. Well, Lou, the last time I saw you was aboard, I believe it was the USS Yorktown in Charleston. And that was when you were with Herman Cain.
Oh my God.
That's how long ago.
Wow.
Matter of fact, I know somewhere around here, I've got his picture. I got his picture, but my late husband and Herman and I were standing at the base of the ramp going onto the aircraft carrier that day. And a great, great picture. Oh, well, Calvin's trying to one up. He's got Trump behind him.
I got Trump behind me, too. I tell you. and then next to Mr. Trump, let me see if I can get her in a picture here. Where are you, Mrs. Trump? Whoops, wrong way.
Yeah,
there
right
she
behind
is
your shoulder.
There she is. I got them all. All right, Lou, go on. Talk about Herman Cain, my man.
Yeah, Herman Cain was my mentor. I really miss him. He was an incredible human being, a man of God. And I would say of all the people that I had the privilege to work with, he was probably one of my favorites. He just was down to earth. Matter of fact, when I saw you in Yorktown, we were up there seeing my nephew, who actually was going to school nuclear school up there, who eventually went off to become a Naval Academy to become an officer. But yeah, that's when we were up there, and that was quite a few years ago. My gosh, I can't believe, but you remember that.
Oh yeah. And you were doing I Am an American, but you were also working for the Convention of States.
Right. It was actually the Balanced Budget Amendment. Same thing, Convention of States. They have two terms for it, Convention of States or the amendatory convention. But yes, absolutely.
Well, I came across something. There's another thing coming out there called the Redeclaration of Independence. Calvin is, he's working it. He's working it. Oh, God, Lord. Oh, I got a funny story to tell you, because we had our district Republican convention a week and a half ago, and I was wearing my cowboy hat with the red, white, and blue bandana, the American flag bandana on it. And as they were taking the votes for the chits, dropping the chits in, you know, people were just picking them in their hands. So our chair turns around and says, "Ann, can I borrow your hat?" It was a Ristol hat, you know, one of the really good ones.
Right.
Well, it's got holes and everything in it because it got passed around so many times. My local GOP chair owes me a cowboy hat. Yeah. Oh, man. I've lost complete control. Oh, I was starting to say there is a movement out there called the Redeclaration of Independence, and it gives 10 items. And I know I threw it with your stuff, and that's what I'm looking for. Oh, here it is. Got it. I got it. I'm not that unorganized. And if you go onto their website, it gives you 10 things that is on there. Oh, here we go. Bear with me, folks. This is live radio. Number one, to honor and enforce the Constitution as written, saying it's not a living document. And as you were fighting for before, the balanced budget amendment. And this includes withholding pay from Congress until they have it done.
That would get their attention, that's for sure. Yeah. I'm all for that.
Establishing term limits. Mm-hmm. Securing our elections, something that Chris and you have been working on in Florida, to ensure the right of free, fair, and transparent elections. Close the border. Number five, level the playing field for American labor through trade legislation laws that foreign producers wishing to sell the products in America abide by the same laws and regulations heaped on American producers. So no more cheap crap from India and China. Enforce American laws, not UN policy. Because now they've got that WHO treaty that they're trying to push, the small arms treaty they're trying to push. We already know that, of course, the southern border, we have UN officials trying to establish outposts outside of the physical UN building in New York City. Make us energy independent. I'm sorry. Name me a single thing that we come in contact with, except for the fresh air outside, that does not require some form of a petroleum product. Yeah. And don't get me started on how poisonous and dangerous these electric cars are. They cause more pollution than a standard automobile. Right. They cost more to operate. So basically, they're going to turn around like our freedom of movement and independence we enjoy as Americans. Biden's going to force us into these electric cars we can't afford. So if we can't afford them, we're going to rely on public transportation. But oh, wait, if you leave in the boondocks, like some of us do, you don't have access to public transportation. But if you need food and medical care and anything else, you're being forced to move into sustainable communities. Oh, wait a minute. We call those cities. You find out I'm on a roll here.
Don't get her fired up. You talked about the boondocks, et cetera. My kid folk and my parents are from Danville, Virginia. And I'm sure CS and Lou know about those parts of the country, Greensboro. You're going to be in trouble, not only because you don't have all the charging stations that they need for all of these electric vehicles. And I'm an owner of one. But the key is the cost to manufacture the batteries, all the components that go in it. That's where the pollution and the cost drives up everything. And it's not the actual operation, because, you know, that costs me anything to operate it. But if that ever goes bad, which I've had it for 7 years, no problem. Just change the tires and charge it up and go. But the cost, as I kept reading, and I just wanted to clarify because I really got concerned after I bought it, is all in the manufacturing cost. And what Biden is doing is pushing us right to China to grab everything that they have now corralled, to include what CS and Lou and I know is Afghanistan, a huge pocket of all the raw materials and the rare earth materials that are required. Now, we got it here, but think what that guy is all up to, and it's just a shame.
Yeah, and you know, that also entails the solar program they're trying to push down our throats. Yes. Too, especially in Florida, which we're going to be pushing back here real soon with a resolution, because like anything else, you got to have a mixed bag of energy sources, and solar is not a good reliable source. It can give you maybe max 5 hours here in Florida. After that, you're going to spend 19, 21 hours in the dark here. So, but that's another issue that we actually cover. One of the things that here at Florida Republican Assembly, we operate off what we call a three-pillar system here. And some of the topics you're talking about is all in our committees, which come under our legislative pillar. But here, God's in charge of our organization here. We put him first. Anything we do, we open with prayer, close with prayer, and use the scriptures throughout a lot of times everything we do. But the big thing that I like to maybe talk about is the three-pillar system that we use here. I like to refer to it as our secret sauce. A lot of people don't realize, McDonald's has their secret sauce. We have our secret sauce. It's called the three pillars. That first pillar is called the community development. The community development, we believe that one of the things that really bothered me in the GOP is that they weren't doing enough in the community. You cannot go to the Hispanic community, the Black community, or the Jewish community and ask for their vote when you don't do nothing in the community. So one of the things that we spearhead here in Florida, and Colonel and I and a bunch of us FRA guys, we go out and we distribute food, and we love doing it. It's really kind of fun. It works on our tan, too. But more importantly is that we pushed out over 165,000 pounds of food last year. And a story behind that, too, is interesting. 2 years ago, the lady that runs this, what they call Feed Up Palooza, her name's Misty, she said to me, "Oh, great, well, you guys are the Republicans." "Yeah, well, you guys only come around every 4 years when you want our vote." And she's a former Republican. Her dad's a Republican. And I recall distinctly when I sat there and looked at it, I said, "No, we'll be here every year you need us." And she said, yeah, right. She didn't believe it. When I came back this second year, along with Cal and a bunch of us, she was literally driving around in a golf cart around the Campy World. We had thousands of people there collecting, getting food and getting them all ready to distribute. And I remember when she looked over, she says, "Lou, you came back." She literally fell out of the golf cart, rolled into the grass, could not get to me fast enough to hug me. She was in tears. "You came back." I said, "Yeah, I told you we'd be back." But you know what? It really hit me hard because I thought, this is the reputation of the Republican Party. They think that we only come around during the years we want their vote. And I said, "No, we're here all the time." So we've been back several times, and we enjoy doing it. I think it's kind of fun. It's good exercise. I know Cal could attest to this, too. We get out there. We're actually the traffic cops here. We like doing that. We don't control the pantries, but we just help facilitate, make sure that the people, they get their cars lined up, open their trunks, and they just drive right on through. "Hey, Chris, glad you can join us, buddy."
Well, welcome to the show, Chris Jersky. Good afternoon. We're having a massive whatever happens show today.
That's okay. It's Friday.
But you know, Lou will talk a mile a minute forever. So we just let him go.
Well, but I want to anyway, go through our pillar system real quick here. It's important because a lot of times these are the things that we do here at FRA, the things that the GOP is not doing. And that's important. I want people to understand and recognize, because we said, look at what they do. They specialize in the precinct. We support them. We'll subsidize them with precinct folks. We let them run that. We let them run the poll watching. That's their lane. We'll help them out, subsidize them on that area. But when it comes to our pillars, though, like I say, the distribution of food is very important. So we're heavily involved with the churches and reaching out to them and trying to let them know we're here for them, distribute food or wherever they need. The other one we have under our community development is our veterans program, which is very, very precious to us because all of us are here are veterans. So, and it's very important that a lot of people don't realize they're the forgotten ones. And so we find people on the street that are veterans. We get them off the streets, get them cleaned up, get them over to Dr. Vieck, who's our vice president of the FRA for our veterans outreach program. He gets them the benefits, and we get them, and I'll help get them a job here. And then some of the jobs we have, some of the folks here locally here, they're willing to give jobs to these veterans here. And actually not, 15, 20 bucks an hour, which is, not great, but it's something to get started, get them off the street. So that's our objective here under the community development. The other pillar we have is also called the legislative pillar, and that entails committees such as voter integrity that Chris oversees. He sees the whole state, vice president for the whole state of Florida, oversee everything going on, helping out getting his platform out there. And let me tell you, he's done a fabulous job identifying these bad addresses here, not only just in Florida, but that's Texas, and he'll talk more about that, and also North Carolina, and working on Michigan. His technology is unbelievable. We're going to be talking to the Trump campaign folks here about taking his technology to the next level, because we can go through his program can go through the whole states in record time. You think about that, 15 million records here in Florida, he did in 2 hours. Texas, 20 million records, 3 hours. I think Chris was telling me he went to walk his dog, make a pot of coffee, and he ran North Carolina. You think he did that less than an hour, you know, but 9 million records there. So, but at the end of the day, though, we're just really pleased to have people like Chris and the Colonel Wimbish, too. We have what I call a very dynamic skill set team. We have specialists, even specialists in energy. David Walsh, unbelievable. This guy was, he joined us too. He's the former CEO of Mitsubishi of the world. The guy has like an incredible of power of energy. He's incredible knowledgeable when it comes to power. And that really talks about our legislative. Within our legislative pillar, we also have, we call this call to action program, which has been a superpower this last legislative session. We went, took our leaders to Tallahassee and Chris, and we went out there and we walked and so much that even Chris's soles of his feet fell off his shoes. So I had to go get new shoes, but we got a chance, opportunity to go out and see, as we say, how the sausage is made in Tallahassee, and get to meet state legislators and senators and shake hands, kiss babies, put face to names. And then when we came back home, they got it. Everybody got it. When it comes to the call to actions, which is our voice, when we see legislation, good legislation, we had like 80 bills that we were monitoring that we wanted to get through. I think 67 out of 80 bills got pushed through. Some didn't get a companion bill, could not. But at the end of the day, though, well, we were very influential in getting them out of committee and to the governor's desk. And we were so influential that Paul Renner himself called me and said, hey, can you help me on a couple of bills like HB 1 and HB 3? I says, absolutely. Oh, and by the way, I have a few bills you can help us on, too. So, but end of the day here, you know, I'm really proud of what we've accomplished. It's an ongoing, growing progress. Well, we look at the statutes. By the way, it's at the end of the session. We looked at some of the bills that got diluted down. So we're going to go back and redline them and put them back through again. You know, it's just an ongoing vicious circle. You got to keep going and chip back what the Democrats have did a good job taking away from us. But we're getting legislation to make it right, so that we're come back stronger for next time. And, of course, our last pillar, which I find very dear to our heart, is what they call candidate leadership pillar. We get to train people like Calvin Wimbish, Colonel Calvin Wimbish, Scotty Moore's people who Representative Bankson, who went through our school, Representative Amnesty, who went through our school, Representative Plakin, who went through our school, all successful. We had 31 folks go through it last cycle. Out of the 31, 20 said, it's too much. I don't want to do it. It's just too much. But that's good, because it's a good vetting tool. We can identify the people who really do want to take the job seriously and learn how to get in and campaign. We teach, I tell people when going through our school, we're going to give you the tools you need to be competitive. And if you follow our recipe to the letter, you're probably going to win. And the 11 folks that got in that race last cycle, 7 of them won their primary. 4 got all the way through. Wow. So I was really proud of that.
Well, I'm going to let Curtis take over here for a few moments, because he knows you guys better and how you work, and let him conduct the interviews, and I will be back very shortly. Go ahead, all Curtis. Right. It's all yours.
All right. So what do you want to add, Chris?
Oh, as far as where to begin?
Yep.
I usually like to start out by just introducing who I am and what drives me. Right. The first thing I typically start out with is that I'm first-generation American, born to two legal Polish immigrants. It didn't feel like it at the time. I was a cocky teenager in New Jersey and had the great privilege to go to Poland and visit it in 1987 when it was communism. I came back and kissed the ground, and all of the stories that I heard from my family started to make sense. I actually stood in the bread line over there and just saw like how evil communism was. There was hardly any running water in any of the villages that we stayed in. And everybody was just essentially just at the survival level. And what I realized at the time is how they used food as a weapon. They essentially were starving everybody there, and they were just dangling coupons for like standing in a bread line. You could get a piece of bread that would kill somebody if you hit them over the head with it. Fast forward from that, I came back, joined the military, heard Ronald Reagan talking about basically Mr. Gorbachev tore down this wall and became a Republican from that day forward. And as fate would have it, I married a Venezuelan woman in the late 90s. And then I watched her country get systematically disabled or dismantled. So the thing that I always point out to was the differences between Poland being taken over by bullets in a military in World War II and Venezuela being taken over by ballots because it was a pure elections steal. And when 2020 happened in the United States, I mean, between those two things of my life, it just galvanized me because I knew what was coming. I can immediately see my kids, like if you fast forward the ghost of Christmas future, I could see my kids emancipated, starving, and turning at me and saying, "Dad, if you knew this was coming, why didn't you do something?" And that's what drives me every day. I wake up basically every morning, basically to run at this problem. What we've since done is I've used my experience basically looking through customer data. I built about 25 years worth of experience, both in the public and private sector, cleaning data as well as validating data, mostly customer records for payroll, invoices, basically customer statements. So it was really heavily focused on addresses and everything around addresses. There was a lot of people that were focusing in on the machines when I first came along for election integrity. Everybody was talking about the machines getting hacked. I have a little bit of experience with computer security and things like that, but because of my background, I figured let's go after the voter rolls. So I built a piece of software called the People's Audit. And the first thing we did was we collapsed every address in the state of Florida in on itself and counted them, how many voters were at each address. And what we found out was pretty startling. Essentially, we found in the 2020 election, a great number of the voters were already people that have moved out of state. And somehow they were voting by mail from people's addresses that now have taken over that house. So we were on a tear to try and figure out, like, how could this be happening? And that basically revolved into a check with the post office, which it's basically the post office has a system. If you've ever bought anything online, if you've gone anything from Amazon or eBay, you've probably seen this screen that says, "Can you confirm your address?" And they make your address all capitalized. And most importantly, they add four digits at the end of your zip code. That's a standard, gold standard, Fortune 500 way of checking your address. There is no way Amazon's sending out a $3,000 laptop to an address that they hope is going to make it there. They're not going to throw paper airplanes and hope that you're going to hit your mailbox. This standard's been around for close to 20-something years, and that's why we have online sales. But the shocking thing, really not really shocking, is that the government implemented mail-in ballots with none of those standards in place. And that generated millions of undeliverable ballots across the whole country. And what we found as we were investigating that problem is those undeliverable ballots, including what I just mentioned before, people that moved away, because if you moved away, you're no longer there. So your ballot is now undeliverable. Those ballots got scooped up and basically used against us. Do you have a question?
Well, you know, I was reading about how you did this, and I found it extremely fascinating because I do a show on Wednesdays called Moms Across America.
Yeah.
And my co-host on that happens to be the chair of the El Paso, Colorado GOP. Mm-hmm. It took her 5 years to get her daughter, who moved away 5 years ago, to finally come off receiving mail-in ballots at the house. And this is the chair of the county GOP, and she couldn't even get her own daughter
Yep.
off of the election roll. Here in South Carolina, we recently did election reform, and individuals were manually going through the voter registration, or the voter list, manually doing that. But if we can do that in hours, matter of fact, I saw the county GOP chair, the state GOP chair, just a couple of days ago, and I'm going to bring up your program to him. but you also have a school. So how does the school tie in with the People's Audit Program?
Well, that's really where the FRA has been absolutely indispensable, because essentially the software is one thing, but without the grassroots involvement, you really can't get anything done. As a citizen by myself, I was basically summarily dismissed. And I mean, I'm an expert for this stuff. And the supervisor of elections were yelling at me, telling me to go do Arizona. Florida's great. There's no problems here. But when you have the political force that FRA brings to bear, and then you have the grassroots of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people basically across the United States ultimately are going to do this, we educate them how to approach their local supervisor of elections and basically take this argument to them. One of the things that was really the breakthrough was, believe it or not, not even talking about fraud. It's just the incredible amount of waste that's generated. So, for example, if you're in a situation like a small county like ours, Lake County had about 30,000 undeliverable pieces of voter information cards. And Alan Hayes, Lake County, Alan Hayes was so proud. He took a video standing next to this baker's rack full of all these undeliverables and asking people to somehow update their voter or vote their voter information addresses. Well, if you're in Florida, anytime you walk into the DMV, your address is automatically updated. There is no reason for you to call the supervisor of elections and ask for them to update your address. So that's the first red flag. But most importantly, when he's standing in front of that baker's rack, you could just take a quick estimate and say, okay, 30,000 undeliverable cards at, let's just say, $2 each to be really conservative. That's $60,000 that they're just going to throw into the landfill when they could have done this all electronically. I mean, all my system is being done through the post office, which is a free, openly accessible system that they encourage people, because the post office does not want undeliverable mail. It is a huge cost burden and drag to the post office to process this, because it has to be done manually, usually by human hands. So when we start confronting them on the cost and the waste, they got really embarrassed really fast. If you confront them on fraud, fraud has to have intent. You have to prove that there's somebody stealing that, which is very hard, but there's no denying the fraud. That's all going to the landfill after it's been manually basically reviewed. And when we showed them how ridiculous they look going through this like horse and buggy style, I wouldn't even say high school approach, because I'd see high school kids run circles around most of these people. That's where they were just embarrassed into doing their job. And now not only did it clean the voter rolls, within the last year, we've removed about 3.5 million people from Florida. You have to understand, Florida's the most popular place to move to. And I guarantee that you're all sitting in traffic now. There's no person in Florida thinking that Florida has lost people. But literally, the New York Times is so trying to cover up what we did here. They're writing articles now that people are leaving Florida because of the politics here or something. Like, it's just maddening. So we've cleaned the voter rolls. Like, there's actually been 1 million active voter reduction since 2020. You can go look at it on Wikipedia. There's 1 million active voters missing from the 2020. And more importantly, the Democrats were actually ahead of us by 2% in 2020. We're now double digits ahead. We're, what's saying, by itself, we're about 9% Republicans ahead, but that swing has been double digits. So it's undeniable, basically, what we've done as far as cleaning everything.
Now, what's Chris, the cost of this, though?
Cost
that the program.
Oh, for Florida, I've donated. I've been doing it for free. We've had people support me through the grassroots with small donations, and Texas basically helped me out with some programming there. But this has all been out of my own company.
So, how is this going to impact the upcoming election in November?
Most importantly, what I just mentioned, we were on our way to turning purple. Like, they were trying to systematically inject and pollute our voter rolls to somehow make us believe that we were turning Democrat. Just within the last like year was most of the cleanup, but that swing now has put us deeply, deeply red. And we have like experts like Seth Keschel that have said that Trump is going to carry Florida now by double digits because of this work.
That's what I want to know.
But since we're relatively safe, the more important one right now that's on the radar is Texas. I would have never believed that Texas was in a threat. Florida really has taken the place of Texas now as being a safe Republican state. They are literally going to flip over Texas if we don't do something. When I first did the analysis in Texas, I found 1.1 million bad addresses in Texas. In Harris County, which is Houston is the city of Houston, had more bad addresses in just one county than we had in the entire state of Florida. So they are systematically trying to take over Texas. We're working on that one day and night to try and get that cleaned up by using the same processes that basically cleaned up Florida.
So you approach then the state officials that are running the election for and instituting this program.
Education of the grassroots. The grassroots are local to the problem, because most importantly, we want to build up this muscle at the community level. And again, this is where the assembly model comes in place. We have to take back our local communities. We can't fight this at the federal level. You can't really fight it at the state level. It has to be from the grassroots up. And when our local counties, they know their addresses, they know they should know their supervisor of elections. In Florida, we have elections officials, basically. They should know them by name, because we should be watching them that closely and making sure that they're doing their job. Most likely, like I said before, effectively using our taxpayer money at the local level is the most important.
Matter of fact, I'm going to give Drew McKissick a call and let him know about this program and see if he can have it then instituted in our state. Because what better than the chair of the state GOP?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right now, we've reached out to the RNC and trying to get some time with them. They're going to meet with us. Basically, what we shared with them is that what Chris Technology does, it deflates the inflated voter rolls. That's probably the best way to say it. It deflates the inflated voter rolls. In Florida here, Chris, when he developed when he did the stats here in Florida, he puts out what I call the good, the bad, and the ugly report, and tells you who the good counties are and who the bad counties are. Kind of pins them against each other, which is brilliant. And more importantly is that most of the counties, 62 out of 67 counties, have been very amicable to work with us. They like the idea, because I tell them, don't use I got you type approach. Use the Colombo approach. Listen, there's some bad addresses here. Can you check into these here? And they've been really good about it. There's five of the counties that have been slow walking, cleaning their voter rolls. But I think a lot of them see the writing on the wall right here in Orange County. Chris and I went down and saw the outgoing Bill Cowles here. But when he saw his what Chris had, he gave him about 20 questions, and he was dancing across the table trying to give excuses, and he said, well, here's X amount. How many, like 15,000, 30,000 bad addresses?
It was like 30,000 that we basically caught him.
30,000, he's like, whoa, that we knew they were bad addresses. But at the end of the day, it's funny, too much later, he put his retirement paper in, because, again, this technology that Chris has created, it built from the ground floor up, it's scaring the supervisor of elections into making sure they do their job. And that's what I kind of like. We're not going to give this to them. He will not give it to them, but we'll be able to run the data through the system so that at least we give it really shows transparency and helps clean up the rolls. And that's the end of the game. It's not about the left, not about the right. It's about what's doing right to make sure that we have transparent and fair elections for everyone.
Wow. Yeah, the reason I call it the people's audit is that's really what it's meant to be. That's the driving factor, is educating locals how to take care of this stuff. Because this is not going away. The moment we take our finger off of this, this is like a dead man switch. The communists are just going to push right back, probably even harder. So we have to probably be doing this for the rest of our life. It's eternal vigilance, basically.
Yeah, because reading some of the stuff that I was going through, and I have to apologize, I had like a little family emergency before coming on air, so my paperwork is shuffled all over. But I'm going through my memory that in Florida, you are now prohibited from doing a hand count.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're fighting that. We're fighting that. I think when I say fighting that, we're trying to, again, it comes back to education. I think a lot of folks don't realize, I'll call a three-prong approach on bringing to their attention. Well, first of all, out of the gate, people don't know that the standards on these machines have never been kept up for 20 years. They have never, you got to think of it this way here. You're basically, when you go to vote, you're like standing in the middle of an intersection, stock raven naked, taking a shower. Everybody can see what you're doing. There is no security on these machines. That's the first thing out of the gate. We brought that to their attention. They're like, holy crap, we didn't realize that. I said, yeah, we look at the standards. And then the other thing that we find alarming is that Cord Bird has been delegating his authority out to the vendors, and he calls them up. Hey, Mr. Vendor, are your standards up to date on your software? Oh yeah. Okay, well, but there's no checks and balance so they can verify that it's been actually updated. So that's a problem right there out of the gate. And one of the things that, again, Chris pointed out too, just the cost that we're losing money. And we did an analysis just here in Orange County. If you were running for a supervisors of election as a candidate, I'd be pretty upset knowing the fact is I got a dirty voter roll as a running for an office when I got to do my mail drops. We call them literature drops out to let them on running. They would run almost, it would cost them, we always teach at least minimum 3 lit drops. It would be 45, it would be a total of 15,000 lit drop of bad address. In other words, 15,000 postage out the door just because it was bad addresses. So you times that by 3, that's $45,000 out the door for the candidate. So in a way, it's not just only cleaning up the voter rolls, but it helps the candidates give them what I call a clean list to operate off of so they can, you know, tell people I'm running for office here. But that is a big thing. The cost, not keeping up with these voter rolls, is costing taxpayers big money when it comes to postage. And the other thing we don't think about, too, to store these things, to store these machines, millions of dollars. Why do we have millions of dollars contracts on these machines to put in a precinct that only has 2,000 voters? That's pretty much the average a lot of times across the counties. I'm thinking, you and I can do 2,000 hand count these things in an hour or so and be done with this here, and we don't need a machine here to do that. So to me, there's a lot of waste, and we're going to approach it from a pragmatic point of view to say, listen, not only are these all Chinese components too, that's also another thing too we had to look at too, that make up these machines, that to me, that's you don't know what kind of malware is in here spying on us, which is a problem we need to look at too. So I'd say 4 things we'll be looking at. That's the bad addresses, the mail postage is costing us to store these things, and also the fact that why are we giving the Chinese our buying product from them, we can build our own.
Yeah, well, they initiated new machines here in South Carolina for the 2016 election, I believe it was, where you placed your vote on one machine, then you walked over to another, which was actually a scanner, which scanned in your ballot. You first checked to make sure your ballot had who you picked on it, then it goes into the scanner and drops into a hopper. There's also a scan code on the bottom that you don't know what it is. So even though your ballot says you voted for XYZ candidates.
Next evolution of this deal. And we have to fight back. Colorado actually went to court for that. And those machines were thrown out as being not certifiable because there's no way to prove that a human actually filled that out. Like literally it looks like a gasoline receipt. Anybody can generate them. And so you can generate as many votes as you want and scan them into another machine. They completely are against a human basically making a mark. And they make the excuse of like, oh, these ballots are being filled in incorrectly or whatever. And it just, that is the next version of the steal. Florida has been moving to some of those in certain state or certain counties. And we have to fight back on that because that is not a hand count ballot or they say that it's a paper ballot. It is the farthest thing from a paper ballot. A paper ballot means that you are filling in a bubble. So just like your signature, somebody can look at that with a magnifying glass and they can see a human touch that. And if you filling in that bubble is much like a fingerprint, there shouldn't be ones that are identical. Every time you fill one in, it's going to look like a signature. There'll be slight differentials. But when you're talking about those printed ones from the computer, like the computer can just generate as many as it needs. And then they're going to say, well, yeah, that person voted. And now it's on you to go prove that that's wrong. Because the only thing you can do is canvass. And it'll take months because we did it. When the 2020 election came, it took us like 3 or 4 months to basically canvass all those people to determine the problems that we found already.
Well, the problem we had also here in South Carolina was ballot harvesting.
Yeah.
And here in South Carolina, an individual could turn in up to 12 ballots.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that on Tuesday, you can pick up 12 ballots and turn them in. On Wednesday, you pick up another 12 ballots and turn them in. Yeah. They have to have signatures and be verified, yes. But who's to say that you're not going into a senior citizen's home and you have a bunch of people that are, you know, catatonic,
yeah,
or unaware of what day it is, much less who's running for president, and have these ballots filled out, signatures made. Oh, yeah, my buddy here is going to verify that's your signature, even though you didn't sign it because you can't sign. We were having that problem.
That's the number one reason why this has to be a local solution, because no matter how good the software is, in that example of like a nursing home, you might have a person that's physically in that nursing home. Now you have to prove, did they actually fill out the ballot? Like you said, they might be suffering dementia or something like that. How are you going to prove that? So the thing here about being local, everybody has to be aware of their surroundings and their hotspots. We call that particular thing a local target of opportunity. We found a few in Florida. There was a yacht club up in Clay County that had 45 people per boat slip, and they were voting at like almost 80%. Like all these people that have yachts in this boat club were all voting by mail. It didn't make any sense. But whenever we weaved all of these together, there was one connecting factor. They all had like kind of like front desk types areas with unsecure mail. So if you have an apartment, typically the post office comes, unlocks your mailbox, puts your ballot into your little post box. That's a chain of custody. You have a government officer putting, or a government worker putting your mail into your secure mailbox. But when you're talking about a nursing home or some of these mail forwarding agencies, RV parks, things like that, it's just the front desk, an average citizen or maybe not even a citizen. And they're just dumping off hundreds, thousands of ballots to this person. And I mean, there's a market for this. You can essentially buy an election.
I don't know about other counties here in Florida, but in Putnam County where I live, and I mean, Tallahassee is run by Republicans. I'm still trying to figure out why are we still using Dominion machines with the controversy
ESS machines for that matter. You're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, to me,
I mean, where's the governor on this?
Well, the governor actually came out and said he's not going to do away with the machines, which I think is actually going against the will of the people. But we're going to, again, I'm putting together a resolution here now and trying to be methodical and pragmatic about this approach to kind of identify as the four areas that I said earlier and give them an actual real numbers of what it's costing taxpayers. It's not cost effective, first of all, you know, at the end of the day. And by the way, Annie, if you get South Carolina data over to Chris, just bear in mind, it has to be right from the supervisor of elections. It can't be a third party. Mm-hmm. And I think, but it's pretty impressive what he can do here. He's just amazing. But listen, I got to go. I have a food truck, Trumpin' at the Food Truck Festival to run. I appreciate being on your show, CS. Hope we get along. Annie, another reunion we'll get back to with you. Chris has got it. This is my guy. I'm telling you what, he's our quarterback of the voter integrity guy. Trust him like a brother from a different mother, like you guys, CS. Anyway, love you guys. Keep up what you're doing.
All right.
Thanks a lot. Right. Typhoon Lou Marion. Known him for years. He's a character. I love him dearly. You're with good company there, Chris. Absolutely good company.
Absolutely. So back to your question on the governor, that's actually a really important note. We have, and I feel that we have a special penance in Florida to deal with this issue head on, because essentially that's where this all started from. If you were back in the 2001 election, 2000, the hanging chads, that's essentially what created this disaster. We had hanging chads here. Florida introduced the machines, and then those machines carried forward through the whole United States. What's unique about Florida, though, is that we had per statute that our votes had to be tabulated by either mechanical or digital devices after that hanging chads thing. So that's the challenge. A lot of the other law or a lot of the other states, they just adopted the machines, but they didn't change their laws. So they have the options to hand count ballots, but they're fighting. It's a pretty good show of the uniparty when you're seeing that everybody's pushing back on this very like common sense approach. Like, A, why can't the citizens own their own election? Why can't citizens count their own votes? I mean, I see the elections officials as referees, not the people playing the game. We're supposed to know who we voted for at our precinct levels. And I trust my neighbors and my citizens to tell me that. Whereas now they just sit back, wait for a receipt to print out from wherever it's being printed out from. It could be from Serbia, China, Iran, who knows? And then they just have to sign it and that's it. And there's no secondary checks. If you've seen other states, they have threatened arrests to elections officials. We have like Tina Peters now looking at jail time, Gold Star mother, only because she just wanted to verify that the accounts happen the way they say they happened.
Well, one thing I do have to say is when they did change the machines, and my county was in the forefront of election integrity reform and laws were changed. But when you do get to the machine and it prints out the ballot, it's like a regular piece of paper, a little piece of paper, let's see, FRA. Mm-hmm. But it will actually show you exactly who you voted for, what referendum and so forth.
Yeah,
so
but most importantly is there's a barcode above it, and that barcode is basically what's being scanned and being interpreted by a machine.
This is,
and at the end of the day, it's just a digital record. It can be changed.
No, but what happens is when this ballot gets scanned in and it goes into the machine, into the box, mm-hmm. our state does audits. And they sometimes do them randomly, or sometimes someone will call up for an election and say, hey, listen, we have problems here. They will manually match the number of people that voted for XYZ to what the machine shows. Mm-hmm. So whatever the machine is saying, that you say 6 million for Trump and 2 for Biden, if that's what the paper said, because now they have a physical manual paper. So it is
most importantly, they'll only do that for one or two precincts, right?
This last election they did for the entire county.
Okay, they did it for the whole county, but in some
there were some questions as to some of the ballots and some of the polling places.
But the thing about those particular machines, you will always have a audit-proof steal because you are printing a digital piece of paper. So they print the digital piece of paper as many as they need, and then you can go back and count it, and you say, yeah, the counts match. But how do you know that a human being actually touched that screen and cast that ballot? You don't. There's no way.
That's why you have poll watchers.
Yeah, but the poll watchers were sitting there with clickers and knew every person and how many people voted. That's the whole thing. They only know the total number of people that vote. They don't know how you voted. Mm. So like the danger of those machines are they are audit proof steals. Everybody will look at each other. I mean, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing is because of Venezuela. Okay. And the same exact game played on Venezuela. Like you're talking about like Trump, Biden, same thing, like oceans of people out in the streets against Chavez. And somehow he's winning the election with 98% participation. And everybody's counting the vote. Everybody's auditing the vote. And they're like, the numbers match. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, is because when we watch what was happening in Venezuela, they're essentially creating a digital illusion of an election happening, when in fact, it's nothing even close to the intent. If you think about what happened in Florida, they were just about to turn Florida purple. And I remember since moving here, I mean, everywhere you go, this is Trump country, Republican country. I remember when there was a Romney race here, I thought it was kind of odd because everywhere you drove in the whole state of Florida, I was in Ocala at the time too. I mean, everywhere you went, there was a Romney sign, no Obama signs anywhere. And somehow Obama won Florida. And I was just perplexed. How? Like I couldn't think that many people in South Florida would flip the election. The entire North Florida was basically Republican.
Wow. It's interesting. It's amazing. And you are the-people's-audit.org. And they could also find you at the, if I can get this right now, the FloridaRepublicanAssembly.com. Mm-hmm. All right. And I'm going to try to get a hold of you, Curtis, if you can give me his contact information and see if I can put Drew McKissick in touch with him. And that way we can get this done here in the state of South Carolina. You give us a lot to think about and just how secure our elections are, and such a vital election we're going into this November.
Absolutely.
The world is watching us like never before.
Absolutely.
And our freedom's not going to stay free unless Chris. We fight for it. And that's what you're doing. We're down to our last few minutes here, Chris, Curtis. We've got like 5 minutes left. So we want to thank you for joining us.
Chris. I was just wanting to know if you're doing this in all the swing states.
That's the goal. I mean, we finally have, with the good help of people in Texas, they were able to fund the ability for us to release into other states fairly quickly. Now it's just a challenge of getting the voter rolls and that information released in those states. Like, for example, Wisconsin, it costs $12,000 just for one instance of the voter roll. And we're trying to do every month. So you can imagine. And in Alabama, they just told me the other day they took the cake, $37,000 for one instance of the voter rolls. So, I mean, that's the challenge right now. We have the capability of doing it. It's just access to the voter rolls.
Well, God bless you for the hard work you're doing, Chris. And we will be talking. We'll have you definitely back on again soon.
Thanks
again. So I want to thank you so very much. Check out Chris Jersky at The People's Audit. Put a hyphen between The People's Audit. Check it out, .org. Curtis, that's all we got for now. So I want to say good night and God bless. And we'll be back next week.
All right.
Okay.
Be safe.
I'm praying for this land I love, America, America, the home of the free. But there are people making plans to change America. They've no respect for her or what matters most to me. That's why I stand for the flag and I kneel at the cross. Mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. In nasty UBP, did God we trust? And the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not America. Do you hear our battle cry across America? We've got to rescue her. You know it's up to me and you to see the truth behind their eyes. Don't change America. God bless America and the red, white, and blue. And I kneel at the cross, mourn for the friends I have loved and lost. And I still believe in God we chose and the freedom our forefathers granted us. I hope it's not too late to save America.
Save America.